Hello and welcome to everyone listening to the Written to Melanin podcast, the place where you come to get your weekly dose of melanated creativity. I'm your host, CM Lockhart, an author of fantasy books featuring Black girls who aren't all that nice and the owner of the Melanin Library, an online database of books written by Black authors. And in this space, I share with you everything I've learned on my journey as a Black and indie author. I'm glad you're here. Welcome to the Written to Melanin podcast, you guys. Today, I am here with Amanda. She is an indie author who writes indie fantasy and horror, and she is the author of In the House of Transcendence, as well as her Witchkind series that includes To Astera with Love and its sequel, To Alaris in Desperation. In addition to her authoring, Amanda is also an author tuber and one half of the horror podcast, The Horror Host Support Group. And today, she's joining me on the podcast to discuss representation in horror, as well as her upcoming novel, No One's Going to Take Her Soul Away. Welcome to the podcast, Amanda.
It is so lovely to be here. Also, you know what's funny? In a little bit of synchronicity, so the very first time you and I had a conversation, we both wore pink. Okay,
yes.
I distinctly remember because we bonded over our love of pink. We are both wearing green today.
We are.
And it's just a little moment.
So if you are watching this on YouTube, you will see that we match. And I don't know why. I think every time that you've come on the podcast, we have somehow matched. And this is not planned. It just kind of happens.
That's friendship for you. Just the wavelengths, the friendships, just...
It's just me doing it. So that being said, if you guys have been around on the listening to the podcast or the channel, then you are familiar with Amanda. This is not her first time on the podcast. So if you have missed her previous interviews or appearances, be sure to go check that out. It's on the channel, it's on the podcast. We always have a great and amazing conversation. And today's going to be no different. So on the off chance that you are brand new, you have never heard of Amanda, then we are going to give you a chance to find out who she is. So Amanda, let the people know who you are. Please introduce your books, introduce what you do, your podcast, all the good stuff.
Yes. Hello, everybody. So again, I am Amanda. I am a Black bisexual indie author. I write fantasy and horror, my two favorite genres. And all of my books feature Black characters. Most of them are queer as well. And my most recent book, In the House of Transcendence, is no different. That one is a dark fantasy book. And my series is an urban fantasy book, and I plan to finish it next year. Essentially, I really enjoy writing about magical characters who exist in kind of a vacuum of just them exploring their magic and not having to deal with racial trauma and whatnot, especially in my most recent book, In the House of Transcendence. I'm currently working on a horror novel, No One's Gonna Take Her Soul Away. I'm also one half of the horror podcast and book club, Horror Host Support Group, where we read and discuss horror novels by BIPOC authors. For November, we are reading The Reformatory by Tananarive Due, so I'm really excited about that. Otherwise, you can just find me on TikTok being goofy, and that's it.
That being said, you guys already know that if you want to follow Amanda on her socials, there will be a link in the linky place, wherever that is, wherever you're getting this content from. Be sure to check that out, and her books are also on the Melanin Library, so you can get into them there as well. So, that being said, you are wearing kind of a lot of hats at the moment. So let's start with the podcast, because I know once we get into the bookish stuff, we are going to live there for the rest of this episode. So tell us a little bit more about the Horror Hoes support group, because that's something that you started with another one of your author friends, and y'all have been keeping it going, and y'all focus specifically on Black horror and horror by authors of color, correct?
Yes. Yeah, so it's... almost been 2 years. We started it February 2021. So we both are just huge horror nerds, horror blurbs, I should say. And we just were looking for content that focused on horror written by Black, brown, other authors of color. And we weren't really finding that. It was all covering movies and TV shows. And we do that lightly here and there, but we really wanted to show some love to the horror authors of color, because they have shaped our love of horror, definitely shaped me on my writing journey. And we just, I don't know, we just have fun both in the podcast and then also the book club, which we meet twice a month.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of wanted to touch on that, because I know one of the things that some people listening to the podcast are looking for is community. And I know that like my niche is fantasy, like very Like that's where I like to live. Give me a magical world, a magic system, all of that. It doesn't need to be too scary because I'm a scary girl and I'm just beginning to dip my toe into horror. Thanks to you, actually, I was like, let me actually see what this is all about. And so if you guys are looking for a podcast that talks specifically about Black horror, for sure, check out the Horror Host support group. And if you do like to read Black horror and you want people to talk about with it, they have the book club. So for sure, check that out as well. But I just want to mention it just in case you guys were looking for it, especially since at the time of recording this, we are in October, which is spooky month, and Halloween is coming up. So by the time y'all get this done, it's going to be past. So
You know what? Every good horror ho knows that spooky season is all year round. You can read horror all year round. So, you know, don't limit it to October. Expand your horizons, everybody.
She said expand your horizons. And just so you guys know, if you're listening to this podcast, then we do have a live studio audience. And La is here with us. So she's agreeing that it's Halloween every day. So... Mm-hmm. There you go. You have your community. You have your community. So that being said, I feel like we have to have this discussion, I guess, on record, right? Because we have it a lot in the after chat, which if you're not familiar with it, is the Discord server that we have to support the Melanin Library. So if you want to be a part of the off-screen discussions, if you want to know what we're talking about, because we do talk about people. We do. We have opinions. And if you like to join,
not you leading with, we talk about people.
We do.
We talk about nouns, people, places, and things. Nouns.
Episode did. That is such an author response. We talk about nouns, people, places, and things. Okay. but no, I say that in the sense of like, we talk about what's going on in the bookish community. And it is very much, you know, when people say you need to go to the group chat, we are very much the group chat where we're talking about things that are happening that you may not want to talk about on the internet at large, because everything is not for the internet. So that being said, if you'd like to support the Melanin Library and join the discussion and have a chance to sit in our live studio audience for the live recordings of the interviews, $5 gets you into Patreon. But one of the things that we talk about, the reason I brought it up, is how within Black fiction as a whole, but especially within Black horror, Black authors tend to have this expectation on them that they have to incorporate like racism and trauma, and that the horror that they're facing has to be something that big, and it's never just the monster under the bed, essentially.
Yeah.
And I know you have very strong opinions about that. So I kind of want to get your take on it, especially since not only have you been a fan of horror for a very long time, but now you're actually writing a horror novel.
Yeah, so, you know, this is definitely something that's more nuanced that a tweet doesn't necessarily allow for a full discussion, so I'm glad we're having it here. I firmly think that any marginalized author, but specifically Black author, should not be obligated to have racial trauma and to deal with systemic oppression in their works. And I said obligated. And it's the obligation and that sense of obligation and the expectation that I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I am by no means talking about, you know, any author who actively decides that this is my lane, this is what I'm going to write about. Because the thing I love about horror as a genre is it allows you to combat the real life horrors that you, your people, whomever may be experiencing, and overcome them in ways that you may not be able to do in real life. And it allows you to kind of having a beginning, middle, and end to whatever anxiety you might be having around a situation, real or imagined, right? Like, I'm afraid of aliens, so you can kind of combat that. I'm not, but if you were, you can combat that, you know, in a work. So I love that horror is that vehicle, but it's just the expectation, especially since Jordan Peele came out with Get Out. There's just that movie has been comped to death. Mm-hmm. And this kind of resurgence of, I guess, social horror, sociological horror, where we're, you know, discussing these things. There's a place for it. I just don't think that that should be every Black author's lane. Sometimes we just want to write about, like, a haunted house, a Black family moving into a haunted house, and mm-hmm. the ghosts, they're not racist, they're just ghosts, and you mm-hmm. just have to deal with it. Or a group of AKAs in a, you know, slasher situation. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't always have to be that racial component.
Yeah, and that's something that I personally feel very strongly about, because I know that lately horror has been kind of the, you like you say in the chat, kind of like the it genre. Yeah. And I was kind of thinking about that lately because, you know, they say that literature kind of reflects the times. And so we are very much living in a dystopian novel. And so I think for a lot of people, they're turning to horror because it's like, I can write something scarier than what I'm actually living. And it becomes a coping mechanism. Versus, I mean, for some people, for sure, it's a cash grab, but I was thinking about it because I was kind of looking at my own writing, and I'm like, my own writing is a lot darker than what it was when things were, I'll say, less like what they are currently, with a a very uncertain future coming up, you know? But even with that said, one of my biggest things that I will always advocate is that, you know, Black authors are not, like you said, obligated to teach you anything with their fiction. You know, it's one thing if you are, like you said, intentionally taking on that voice, taking on that point of view, tackling a specific subject. But everything that we write is not political, and it shouldn't be this expectation that it is political. And it's one of those things where I think, even for me, you know, as we have these discussions about, like, why aren't, let's be real here, we're gonna be real on the podcast, there are certain books that have come out since 2020 that just have been marketed to specifically a Black reader audience that have just not hit. And they are, these authors and these books are hyped to the gods, and the people who enjoy them the most are not the people who the market is saying they are targeted for. And that is us. And for me, part of that reason is because it feels very much like, I don't want to say where is the escapism, right? Because fantasy and contemporary and all these things, books in and of themselves are escapism, because you're going into someone else's imagination anytime you pick up a book, right? But there's also this factor of, you know, like you said, you pointed out, horror is to an extent a way, an outlet to deal with some of the things you do that you have to face, but you have options that are not afforded to you in real life.
Yeah.
Part of my issue with a lot of these books is the fact that even within the books, the characters are still stuck up under the same things that they have to deal with in real life with no means or outlet to actually combat it. It's still, you have to suck it up. It's still, you have to take it. It's still, you have to accept it for the reality that it is, versus being like, no, I'm going to do something about it. But that is a whole rant.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. And it makes me think about, you know, I'm not sure if you know, so Jordan Peele for Get Out actually had an alternate ending. And in the alternate ending, spoilers, this movie's been out since 2017, okay? Mm-hmm. But in the alternate ending, it's not his friend who comes to get him and they kind of ride off into the sunset, so to speak. It is actual police, and they get him and they arrest him. And he kind of is just resigned to his fate that he's gonna, you know, now be incarcerated and is very defeated. And I guess he wrote that as kind of a, this is a reality that we often face as Black people. But I think when he tested that ending with audiences, obviously they weren't as receptive to it as the actual ending, which is, again, his friend from the TSA comes to get him. We have this oh shit moment of, is he going to be arrested? But no, it's his friend. And then they, again, they leave, and no consequences happen for what he did. And I think that's what it is, right? Is that, like, if you're going to write these situations where there's this racial trauma, and yet your intention is not to have them overcome it or to have them have a happy ending in the end, what are you saying with the content that you're doing? What are you bringing new to the table? Because we already know that our likelihood of being arrested, being profiled by the cops, dealing with this racism, dealing with, you know, losing jobs, getting our hair, you know, chopped off on a basketball team because they don't like our locks. Like, we already deal with this stuff. Mm-hmm. If you're going to put it in a horror novel, what are you saying? Are you giving your characters catharsis or not? Because otherwise, it feels like trauma for trauma's sake instead of a full re-examination and then reclamation. And I think, to your point, it's a matter of, who are you writing this for?
Yeah.
Because if you're writing this for a Black audience, Do you really think that the best ending would be for these characters to end up in jail or to just all suffer, no triumph, you know?
And I think part of it is like, I think there is value in art that brings awareness, right? Because the reality of it is, you know, for us, it is a built-in reality. It's something that we see, experience, hear about, know about. It is something that we live with from the moment we realize that we are Black. And because of that, people for the rest of our lives are going to treat us differently based upon that, right? That is one aspect of it. So it's like, yes, it's ingrained, but then also the reality that on the other side of that coin, that is not the reality for a lot of people, and a lot of people don't know. So I do think there is a place for bringing awareness to the reality, to the forefront, but I also think that there has to be a balance, and that when you are writing it to bring it to the forefront, to make it a discussion piece, to make people see it, to look at it, to feel it, that there is meaning behind that.
Yeah.
But don't market it to the people who already feel it. You're not going to sell ice to an Eskimo. You know, it's just like, I get it. I've already got it. I don't need any of this. You know, I'm going to sell ice to someone who's living in the freaking desert. Like, you know nothing about this. Hi.
Yeah.
Let me introduce you to this concept.
And I think that, again, that's why that movie, because I don't want to keep mentioning it, but that movie was effective across a wide demographic, especially for Black people, because we triumphed in the end, and we were like, yeah, this is what we have to deal with. This is an extreme version of what we deal with, and yet we get to win in the end. So that, I think, is what it is. I tweeted about this because it was a prompt about what horror opinion will have you, and, you know, those prompts be going around all the time. And I tweeted that, saying sometimes we just want to coast on vibes and not have to be writing about, you know, racial trauma. And somebody retweeted and said, but what if I still want those stories? I still want those stories that are important.
Then go read it.
Then again, then that's exactly why it's like, when it comes to having these discussions on social media, particularly in a tweet, it doesn't necessarily allow for that nuance to say that I mean that the obligation and expectation. I'm not just talking about that coming from white folk. I'm talking about that coming from Black people as well.
Yeah.
And we can see that in a recent situation that happened. This is a fantasy author with Blood at the Root by Ladarion Williams, which just came out on Tuesday, where he specifically... The cover. Where he said that this book is about... His character is a magical HBCU, is from Alabama, and he's practicing voodoo. But there's no racial trauma in the book, and a lot of people felt a way about that. And he basically had to clarify that that's the... Of course, he's carrying the weight of that, of his ancestry, of what this magic means, but it's not being... The racial trauma is not centered in the book. And again,
and that's
like,
important.
The nuance of it all, and, you know?
And I think it's also one of those things where, and this could be an unpopular opinion, I don't know. So if you're listening to this, I mean, take it how you like. But I also think it's not really a nuanced conversation, because it's just like, so I should not have to sell you my trauma in order to be successful. That should not have to be what every book written by a person of color is about, because that in and of itself is centering white supremacy, saying that, oh, because I am not white, therefore my life has to be nothing but struggle. No. That is not, and it's always interesting to me when we have these conversations about, you know, Black people are not a monolith. It's like, no, and we still live full lives. Like, we are not, there are definitely moments and times where obviously we have to talk about it. We have to call a spade a spade. We have to be the person with the bullhorn being like, look at this, right? But then other times we are just going about our lives like everyday people. And I think, you know, being born Black and magical and deciding to go to a magical HBCU where your grandmother is teaching you how to use the family magic, like, sure, the everything, if you go back far enough, if you go back through the history of any Black person, yeah, you're going to get to trauma. You are going to. The entirety of America is based on Black trauma. That's a fact. But the reality of it also is present day, not everything is about racial trauma. He's just going to a magical school to learn magic that has been in his family for generations. There is nothing inherently racial about that. And just because he's in the South, just because he's Black in Alabama, does not inherently make his story one about racial trauma and police brutality. Because despite what, you know, is on the television, a lot of us never have negative interactions with police officers. And don't get me wrong, I'm still very much defund the police, and I'm very much, you know, I'm not gonna say it, but you know what? If you've met me, you know who I am, and I'm gonna leave it at that. But that being said,
you know, it's very much that in this household.
It's very much, I think there are so many better ways that this government, this world can be run, and that the reason it's not is because there are a lot of people who are financially invested in making sure that it is not run that way.
And yes, they continue to benefit from the way things are. The system is not broken. It's working exactly as designed.
Yep.
And, you know, we, and by we, I mean, not we, right?
Yeah.
But like, we are just noticing that and seeing that. But Black people, brown people are like, oh, we've been there. where you been, girl?
y'all are new to this. We are not. And I don't know.
Honestly.
And so I think it's one of those things where, like I said, I don't really think it's that people lack nuance. I think it's that people are incapable of looking outside of themselves and understanding that if you're going to say that we are not a monolith and that we have the full breadth of the human experience and that we don't need to sell you our trauma in order to be validated and to have access in a space in this industry, then you have to give us space to do that. Like you said, not every book is about social justice. And it doesn't need to be. Everyone's not going to be Angie Thomas. Not everyone's going to be Tiffany D. Jackson. Not everyone's going to be, you know, insert famous Black author here who 9 times out of 10 has most of their work featuring some type of oppression or trauma. No shade to those authors, but that's the reality of it.
Yeah, and I think it's not a complicated issue, but it is something that is it warrants a discussion instead of just a single sentence. I think, you know, the other thing about it is how understanding your target audience and knowing who you are writing for primarily, right? Because you and I very much are very vocal about that we write primarily for Black people.
Yep.
That's our primary audience. For me, I write primarily for Black people, for Black queer people, and those are our lanes. Anybody else who reads my work and enjoys it, it's a bonus for me. But I think that sometimes when we have these books that come out, maybe the reception's lukewarm, or the writing's mid, or, you know, it kind of does what we've been discussing, where it addresses the social issue without necessarily giving their characters kind of a happy ending, so to speak. I think it's partially because you are not writing, you don't know your primary audience, and so that, or you're writing for the white gaze, G-A-Z-E, not gays.
I'm dead.
You know, and so that is you going, hey, look, we're human. Look at the trauma that we can face. Isn't that wild? Shouldn't you treat us better? And I'm not in the business of begging for better treatment, no shade, but I'm in the business of writing for the people who I want to write for my people, and anybody else who enjoys it, great.
Exactly that. And I think that's my ultimate issue with a lot of how books are marketed. It's just the fact that, you know, you say one thing, but the book is demonstrating something completely different. And I am very much a say it with your chest type person. Like, if you're not writing for us, don't tell me that you're writing for us. Like, it's fine. Like, if you were like, I want to be successful in this publishing machine, this is my dream, and I'm going to do what I have to keep my dream, more power to you, babes. Do it. Congratulations. But don't tell me that you're doing something for me when you're doing it for yourself, or you're doing it for someone who is specifically not me and nothing like me. Like, save your breath. Because I'm also a harsh critic, and I wasn't gonna like it anyway, even if it was for me. So, like, I don't know why you're jumping through these hoops. I am having a rough day.
No. I feel
the attitude was unnecessary and unwarranted. My bad.
Oh, no. Never. Completely necessary, because I feel you 100%. I do think that that's one of the issues that we've been having with a lot of these books that have come out, to your point, since, what, 2020? Because a lot of the books that are coming out now are books that were sold or written in 2020. Or written in 2020 that are now out, right? Because that's how the tradpub machine works.
Yeah.
And we, in the group chat, are all collectively heaving a sigh, giving them bombastic side eye, that rhyme, because of just those issues. They feel rushed, they feel made, they feel not really written for a certain audience in mind. And, you know, if you are listening and wondering why is it important to write for a target audience instead of just the mass market, is that you have these issues, right, where you're not able to make salient points. You're just saying racism bad, but you're not able to like delve deeper than surface level. Prime example, I'm making a point here, is Barbie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Movie was cute, liked it, fun, whatever, right? Ryan Gosling chewed the scenery. But the monologue that America Ferrera gives, this, you know, feminism monologue, is very like white feminism. Feminism 101. If you've seen it, if you've engaged in any other kind of feminist discourse, any other kind of womanist discourse, which is what I characterize myself as, a womanist, then you understand that there's no intersectionality in that monologue. There's no nuance. It wasn't bringing anything new to the table. It wasn't examining the privilege that Barbie would have as a white woman with blonde hair, blue eyes, able-bodied, thin. It wasn't doing any of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what some of these books do when they're very surface level. You're not examining and really scratching the surface. So then it's like, well, why am I reading this when you are just simply trotting out this trauma and regurgitating it for the mass audience and not saying anything new with it?
Yeah. I mean, that's basically what it what it boils down to a lot of the times. And to the point of the target audience and kind of echoing exactly what you just said, it's like, when you know your target audience, it's like there are certain people who are going to resonate with what you're saying. And the fact of the matter is, people are different, lived experiences are different, and so who you're writing for matters. Because if you, it's the same reason why books are broken up into age ranges, because what a 10-year-old is going to read and enjoy is not going to be the same thing a 30-year-old is going to read and enjoy. That's why they are in different genres, because the story is going to be different, and how the lesson is approached is going to be different, and the focus is going to be different, and how the characters deal with things are going to be different. Part of the reason young adult is for teenagers is because they are a lot more impulsive and they don't think things through, and every situation that they are in is the end all be all, because they have not lived long enough to realize that, oh, there's another side of this. Like, you're going to get through it, it's going to be fine. Because once you get to that point, guess what? You're an adult and you're going to think differently. So it's important to know who you are writing for, even if that isn't the person who ultimately picks up your book. And it's just kind of like, I think there's also the reality that we have to have the discussion that a lot of people don't want to have, because it requires calling a spade and saying it with your whole chest. And that's that a lot of these authors who are picked up, especially authors of color, especially Black authors, their writing styles mimic very heavily the white authors who were already in print. And those are not the cream of the crop. I'm sorry to break it to you. They are the cream of what's available and what's tolerable. And it's just like, it's like when you go to the store, right? If you're going to Walmart to buy milk, you're going to get the best of what's available there. But that doesn't mean you're going to a dairy farm and getting the good stuff. That doesn't mean that you're going to Lidl or even Target and getting any like oat milk or having options. You're going to get what's available. You're going to get whole milk, 2% or 1%. That's it. And just because you got the best of what's available at that one place doesn't mean that you got the best that's available, period. And a lot of writing in traditional publishing, in my experience, has been shopping at Walmart. And that may be a very unfair assessment, but I will also say there are some shining stars within traditional publishing that are absolutely killing the game. But I also notice that they are not the ones who get the most press and most buzz and most support.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's also kind of what it is in a lot of different industries. It's a matter of how willing are you to kind of toe the party line and to be acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
I think also that part of this, as it relates to horror, is how versed are you in horror? So, okay, let me just trot out my credentials right quick as a horror girly before anybody hears this and is like, okay, but like how, you know. I have been watching horror movies since I was 6. Mm-hmm. My first experience with genuine horror movie was Chucky. Yes, the black urge to say Chucky versus Child's Play. It's real here, okay? My siblings would make me watch horror and then say, if you're not good, Chucky's gonna come and get you, okay? Charles Lee Ray was my first nemesis. Mm-hmm. So I have been watching, consuming that genre forever, both that and then in written form. I fell into the Stephen King trap very young because that's what I knew was available, and discovered Tanana Redu and other black authors and went, wow, okay, why did I not know this before? So I'm really well versed in horror as a genre, all of its subgenres. I love it so much. And one thing I'm finding is that with horror being the it genre, it seems like a lot of these books are written by people who are not well versed in the genre. And the reason why that, to me, is a bit of an issue is because if you don't know the rules, how can you break them? Right? If you don't understand the genre conventions, why certain things are, what a final girl signifies, you know, what the harbinger is and the setup of a slasher, why, you know, when you inject paranormal into a slasher, what that means. Like, if you don't understand these things, it's gonna read as very flat and mid. And some of these horror books that I've been reading recently by Trad authors have been letting me down because it just feels like they're written by people who are jumping into the genre and not because they enjoy it and because they want to contribute to it. It's that, oh, this is the it genre. You know, forecasting is showing that everybody's going to be interested in horror, so I'm going to just write a horror book real quick and get my coin and then jump back into fantasy or my preferred genre. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I have been ranting about both on here and then Horror Host Support Group podcast, because I just don't mess around in my genre if you're not going to take it seriously.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that I think a lot of people just need to hear. It's like, if you're going to do something, don't do it halfway. Like, stand 10 toes deep in it and be like, yeah, this is it. And learn the rules of the game before you try to play it, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, but all that being said, kind of veering off of this rant that I feel like we've been on for a little while, let's actually talk about your upcoming book, No One's Gonna Take Her Soul Away, because it is a horror and it is black horror. And, you know, you've been talking about knowing the rules and stuff. So I guess kind of how are you taking like the rules and the expectations of, you know, black horror in a positive way? Right? Not talking about the trauma, but like the expectation of what you get when you open up a book that's advertising itself to be a horror. And how are you like putting that into No One's Gonna Take Her Soul Away?
Well, firstly, this book is inspired by two really great works of literature and cinema. So primarily it's inspired by Dante's Inferno, or The Inferno by Dante Alighieri. We all know it. We've all probably been taught it at some point. Essentially, you know, a person going to multiple layers of hell, witnessing all the different punishments and tortures and coming out the other side. It's also inspired by The Wiz, not The Wizard of Oz, The Wiz, because The Wiz is much better.
Never seen The Wiz. I've seen The Wizard of Oz. I was in the household where we had The Wizard of Oz on VHS. We did not have The Wiz.
Okay, so what we're gonna do as a friend, as friends, we're going to figure out a way to watch The Wiz together on the interwebs. And you need
I tried to watch
this.
It one time and I fell asleep because I knew what was coming. I kind of knew the premise of it. So, you know, it was a childhood thing. Yeah, that was not what we had in the house.
We're going to change this. Let's offline. We'll talk about this thing.
Well, I've never seen it either.
Oh, no.
It's not just me. I'm not the only Black person who has not seen it.
Look, that movie is pure Black excellence. Even just the scene, the scene in green kind of medley where they're oh my God, like, I could go on and on about how great that scene is, how many iconic people are in that scene. Iman, Quincy Jones, like, people, we as a people put our entire leg and booty cheek into that movie. Like, the foot, the leg, the booty cheek.
I'm dead.
Put it all into this movie. And that's partially why I was inspired to write Woman's Gonna Take Her Soul Away. So this book follows my main character, named Saphira, and she, at the very top of the novel, is unalived. I say that because I don't know the content warning. So she's unalived and sent to what is essentially hell in this world. It is a world similar to ours, only with a different religion. There's nine gods, so it's not hell. It is Pandemonia that she's sent to. And she believes and knows that this is a mistake. She doesn't belong there. And so she, after being there for a pretty short amount of time, very quickly realizes, I need to get the heck up out of here. And ends up, along the way, as she's trekking through every single area of this realm, recruits a very moody but sexy vampire, a very charismatic, hopelessly romantic werewolf, and a melancholy, doing it for her own personal reasons, demon, as she tries to make her way out of Pandemonia to, you know, get back to the land of the living. And I've been working on this book for the better part of a year now, which is very long for me, but a big part of that is the world building. This realm is very expansive, extensive. There's multiple, like I said, areas. It's thinking about the torture, it's thinking about what the terrain looks like, how they move through it, making sure that the pacing is right. So I'm on rewrites now, and I'm very happy with it. This book is also my most personal book because it draws a lot from my marriage, which ended in April. I'm currently going through a divorce. And so it's a lot of me putting that trauma and the hurt and some of my experiences into the book. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think, partially why it's also taken me so long, is because it's also me working through those things I've experienced. But in terms of, like, what you can expect beyond that, you can expect a disco diva, because this is, you know, the part that's set in our world is set in the 70s. Anybody who knows me knows that I love disco. That's my favorite genre of music. I wish I could have been at Studio 54. I would have been cutting up, acting up, straight up full. If I had gone there. And, you know, it's really about a woman choosing herself and reclaiming her power and also potentially falling in love along the way.
Gotta love that part. Gotta love that part. Honestly, I'm excited for it. I know that you've been pouring a lot of your time and your energy into it. And as an author, I understand that there are some stories, and I talked about this a little bit on one of my YouTube videos. Either have, might, whatever. I know that I've mentioned it. I don't know if it actually made it to the internet or not. I will say that. But there are some stories that just kind of like pour out of you that are just so easy. And there are other ones that you kind of like have to rip out of yourself. And it's just like, it's there, but it's attached. And to get it on the page, it takes a little bit more time and more effort. It takes a digging a little bit more deeply and being a little bit more careful and, you know, healing in certain ways as you're getting it out and just being like, wow, whoa, did not know I was going to stumble upon that childhood trauma. I will take that to the therapist next time I see her. But for now, we're going to get this out.
Right.
You know? And so I'm proud of you for sticking with it and getting it done. And if you're listening to this and you are not Amanda, I'm also, and you're writing a story and you are making headway and you're pouring your time and your energy into it, despite, you know, lifing and, you know, your doubts being like, this isn't it. This isn't the one. I just need to shelve it. I'll just come back to it later. Or this isn't for me, whatever your doubts are telling you. And if you've continued to push through, I am proud of you. Keep going. You will get to where you need to be. It is literally the journey of everyone at some point or another, no matter what they tell you. If they tell you that they've never been there, they're either not a good writer or they're lying. So yeah, take that with a grain of salt.
This is, you know, to your point, this is one of those books that I feel like it's ripping a lot out of me. You know, there's a scene kind of later in the book where my main character is really having her doubts and is comforted by those around her. And I cried writing that scene. And it's really rare for me to do that while I'm writing. I'll cry kind of after. Generally, once I finish a book, I'm a freaking mess. And I just fall out of my chair just sobbing because it really is like giving birth, you know, because it takes so long to get it all on the page. And I cried writing that scene because at the moment I was in a really, really low point in my life, just personally and going through divorce and other things. And I wrote in that moment the things that I would have needed to hear, like that I needed to tell myself, that I needed somebody to tell me. But in that moment, all I had was myself. And so I told that to myself through my writing, if that makes any sense. And
it does.
I was literally like bawling writing that scene. So I hope when people read it, they kind of get that vibe at that point, because this book is very personal to me.
I mean, and I think that's good because, you know me, I love anime, I love manga, so prepare for the reference, right? But it's also one of the things that, like, one of the biggest pieces of anime, like, globally is Sailor Moon. And the artist, the mangaka, has said multiple times in multiple interviews that Sailor Moon came into existence because she was at a low point in her life and she didn't have any friends. And so the story that she wrote were the friends, like, she wrote stories about girls who she wished were her friends. And that's how she got through it. And again, look at it now. It's like one of the biggest anime franchises in the world, aside from, you know, like Pokemon and One Piece, right? One Piece is the biggest, but I digress. The point is, there are people who don't even watch anime or anything like that who have seen and know Sailor Moon, right? So it's just like when something is personal and it comes from you, it's like that emotion, that passion that you pour into it, it may not be like a tangible thing. Like, you can't just put it on an analytic scale, but it matters when you're writing a story, you're being creative. You know, you are sharing a part of yourself, and the part of yourself that you're sharing, when it's raw and pure like that, people resonate with it, you know?
Yeah, I definitely think people will hopefully be able to pick up on that throughout the whole book, but especially in some of those scenes where my character is at a low point. I would say if you are a fan also of, again, Inferno, The Wiz, you'll get those references, but also some of the other things that I'm kind of inspired by in this book include Hellraiser, which is a personal favorite of mine. And just some light body horror. This book is pretty gory because, again, it's in a kind of a hellscape. So if you can stomach that, you will really enjoy this, because not only does it have those horror elements, but there is a little weaving of fantasy within it. So, yeah.
So, yeah. And you guys know that if you're interested, there'd be a link in the place. So go ahead and click on it, get into it. If you're into pre-ordering, go ahead and pre-order it once that is up. And yeah, make sure that you are following Amanda. And if you are excited and want to, like, test out her writing, for sure, get into her other works. She does have a backlog. So go ahead and get into that. And yeah, I am here for it, you guys. That being said, we are at 45 minutes. So we're going to start wrapping this up. That brings me to a couple of questions that I ask every time you come on the podcast. So first one is, what writing advice would you give to new authors starting out on their writing journey? And this I'm going to say is specifically for writers who want to write good horror.
I would say do some research into the horror genres, subgenres. Get an understanding of what they kind of symbolize. Gothic horror is kind of a good example of what makes a good gothic horror. Don't be afraid to freak yourself out and scare yourself, both in the emotional sense and then also with whatever kind of horror you're putting on the page. And have fun. Horror is such an amazing genre, and there's so much you can do with it kind of once you get steeped in it. So don't be afraid to have fun. Scary fun.
Scary fun. That's a word. Okay. That being said, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Yeah, I mean, you know, primarily you can find me on TikTok. I've been spending a lot of time on the Clock app these days. Also Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at Amanda the Author, the with two E's, and Amanda the Author Amanda the Author with one E on Twitter because there's a character count, and Amanda the Author with two E's on TikTok because there is no character count. And I just talk about anything and everything in fantasy, horror, world events, and my personal life a little bit as well.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, you guys, y'all know, link's in the place. Check it out, follow her, support her, and all of the amazing stuff that she is doing. Promise you, if black, queer, fantasy, horror, you're going to love it. You're going to love it. So, that being said, you guys, that is it for this episode of the Written in Melanin podcast. If you like to support this podcast, then please share it with someone you think may enjoy it. Join my Patreon at patreon.com/writteninmelanin or grab a copy of my books, We Are the Origin and We Are Dying Gods, from my website, cmlockhart.com. If you want to support Amanda, then please purchase her books and follow her on social media. There are links in the show notes for everything. And thank you guys again so much for listening. Until next time, you guys, I hope all your books are full of melanin.